The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Kelly Singleton, HR Director for Mago Digital Agency and Global Corporate Development, including MAG USA. Thanks, Kelly. Everyone's incredibly busy these days, so to find and carve out sort of an hour is never the easiest thing, so I massively appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, no problem at all.
It's really cool to have you on the show. My mum was a HR director, so and she does have a tendency to listen to some of my shows, and I always feel a little bit of added pressure there when I'm talking to someone in HR, because I'll inevitably get a conversation, I get a phone call asking me about what the hell I was talking about. So always that added pressure when I talk to someone from HR, but always a pleasure as well. I think they're always some of my favourite conversations.
I feel under pressure now. I want to impress your mother.
yeah. Well, don't we all? Don't feel the pressure. It's not you. You'll be the one who will be impressing. It's me that normally lets the team down. But I want to really get straight into things because I think it's such a fascinating time that we're in at the moment. I'm not going to talk about politics, but I think inevitably, like, politics and culture have been just amplified in recent years, right? And I think that those kind of high-level pressures seem to be put onto corporate life as well, certainly from like a cultural perspective. And I think what that's done is kind of elevated the importance of someone like yourself or, you know, the HR team in general. I think it's always obviously been, vitally key role. But it seems like even more now than ever, it's almost like it kind of expected. And I actually wanted to just open it up really by asking you whether you feel yourself like there has been kind of added pressures on kind of HR departments in kind of recent years.
I just think things constantly evolve and change, don't they? And I think then when you're in a role like this or any role, particularly leadership roles, you have to adapt and change with the times. And I certainly feel the expectations have changed from sort of a colleague perspective, from where they were when I was a graduate coming into the market, where you kind of, you would apply for your roles, go through the milk round sort of thing, and go on graduate programs, and you sort of got what you were given, and you accepted that was your graduate program, and that, you know, was going to be your life going into leadership roles. Now it's very, very different. So when I look at the expectations of generations Y and Z, I think quite rightly they've got much higher expectations on what that colleague journey should look like for them, and they are politically astute. I think you can see some of that kind of coming out in the media at the moment. But also, they have high expectations in terms of values and their core beliefs. And I think what's different, I don't think other generations haven't had that, but I think what's different is their unwillingness to compromise on that. So I'm starting to see more and more change coming from colleagues as they're entering the business, particularly from the grassroots level, saying, why is it like this? Why do you do that? Why don't you do it like this? Which for me is just a gift, right? Because they're actually helping you to shape a colleague experience and a colleague journey that they want and that will actually engage them and help them to perform in your business. I think it's a great voice.
Yeah. It's also incredibly difficult now, though. I think it's added to like a new dynamic because there is a lot more individuality that comes from that. And kind of subsequently, you're in a position where you can't have cast kind of a broad stroke over this thing called culture or, how we're going to align our values, because everyone is seemingly more of an individual and has an opinion of their own. So it surely must make things like quite complicated to, like you say, to brush that kind of broad stroke over things?
I think it is really difficult, and I do think we make generalizations every day, don't we? Mm. I just did it with Gen Y and Gen Z, and
right.
You know, we talk about digital people and the types of personalities they have. I've got a whole team of digital people here, and they're all incredibly different in terms of their personalities, their backgrounds, and their cultural heritage, everything. So it brings a richness of diversity, and it's absolutely fantastic. I think the pitfall we can fall into is that we can cast generalizations, and we can, in particular in HR and leadership roles, set strategies and cultural agendas and values in an office and then cascade. Those days are gone and absolutely should be gone. And one of the things that I did, I was in a very fortunate position. Obviously, we were building a business from the ground up, albeit within a much bigger corporate environment. Mm-hmm. I was able to kind of sit down with that very small team of 35 people at the time and say, what do we want to be known as? How do we want it to look and feel around here? You know, when we're going out to the market, what are we telling them? What's our story? So they weren't just involved in setting the business strategy with us, and they very much were part of hacking that, but they also hacked with me the colleague strategy and the colleague journey we were going to identify. So, you know, we had several, four or five sessions, I think it was, where we sat down with them and gave them an element of the colleague journey. Said what works, what doesn't work, what should we really focus in on, and what will shift the dial for you, what will help you to do your job, what will help you to feel happier in your role. And then we focused our efforts and our finances in those areas, and it made a huge difference. I realized I'm going out into the market to hire digital people, and no one knows what MAGO is. And Manchester is incredibly competitive in this area. I don't just have to go out there and tell the story and get people in, which obviously we did have to do. Mm-hmm. Once I get them in, I need to make it so compelling and sticky that they want to stay with us and don't want to kind of just have this constant, revolving door policy. So, I think by getting them involved, by really engaging them in who you are, what your journey is, what your values should be, what your strategy is going to be, I think that's the differentiator these days.
Do you think that strategy has changed in over time as well? Because it is very much, you know, like say even my kind of parents' era, you know, it was very much about kind of get involved in a company, you know, it was like that kind of Henry Fordism, right? You know, where it's the 9-to-5 that was kind of conceived by him, and then the kind of education system, you know, taught us to kind of fall in line, and we subsequently had everyone who would work for the same company for their entire lives, and there wasn't kind of ever much questioning going on of the status quo. And I think that's pretty much gone, I would think, now. But it's obviously something that is relatively new, I think, this kind of, maybe it was millennial or whatever, but it's clearly a different strategy now for HR. And I don't know, like things like investment and such surely must have changed, maybe even, in the time of your career.
Absolutely. I've seen it change so much. I mean, I came in as a retail graduate very early days, and I can tell you my experience to the ones that the apprentices and graduates experience here at MAGO was very different. And I wouldn't say it was a patch on what these guys are on the receiving end of today. But it is that shift in mindset. If you actually design and construct this thing together, you know, as you would if you're in a partnership or a friendship or anything outside of work, you've got much more chance of it being successful and for people to feel engaged with it. And I just think it just takes that small shift in mindset. And once you go there, I'm not saying it's easy the first time you did it, because I struggled the first couple of times that I did this. But once you do it, you realize actually it's easier to do it this way, because you could sit there in a dark room writing a strategy and really, you might be able to link that to what the business needs you to do, and you might be able to kind of really understand what the shareholder expectations are, what the market is doing, and all those great things, and link the colleague strategy to that, as you should. But if you're not speaking to your colleagues, then how do you know that that's going to be successful and it's going to land well with them? So all it is a slight shift in perspective. And I know that in some businesses, and I network a lot with HR colleagues, some are doing this really well and some are doing it, you know, as they've always done it, so they haven't really shifted much. So I think it's a gradual change process that we all have to kind of go through. And some businesses just aren't there yet.
Yeah, the reluctance to change is a really interesting one. And I can imagine as well, depending on what the business is, and maybe I suppose like things like brand recognition, probably play a part of that as well. It's almost a bit of snobbery, isn't it? I suppose in some ways, to think that you don't have to change and adjust.
Absolutely. I think the really important thing to remember is that your colleagues are your brand ambassadors.
Yeah.
So no one is going to really tell people about your brand and know it as well as your colleagues do. Not even your customers would do that. So I think it's great to have them really on board with what you're doing so that they can be the brand ambassadors. And one of the things that we did was, you know, we set out to kind of say we are going to really get out into the market and explain to people what it is that we do and who we are. But we want you all to be a part of that journey. It's not just going to be me or our MD, Nolan, or our CEO, Andrew, going out into the market telling people this, you know, exciting new journey we're on. Mm. I want all of you to be involved in that as well. And so one of the things that we see the guys doing just off the bat because they want to do it is they're blogging. You know, we get people who have been here 2 or 3 weeks and they'll put blogs out saying what their experience has been. And they're going to do charity events and then asking if we can have printed t-shirts, and they're so proud of where they work, and it's not sort of forced upon them, it's coming from them. That one of the things that I've just said is we are the brand, so, you know, let's live it, let's really experience it, and if there's anything that you don't think we're doing right, then let's adjust it. I think that's really important, because if they're not happy with their journey, it's going to spread right across the market, and you're going to be on this constant struggle of attracting talented people into your business and really retaining them.
Yeah. Well, I think we're certainly seeing it highlighted in kind of the tech sector, especially, seems to have kind of yielded this. And I think the general involvement of tech, I certainly believe that community has pushed forward a lot of this kind of change, even to a cultural level. And I think the interesting thing is that we see the infrastructure that technology has allowed us to kind of build. But ironically, it seems as though the human side of it and the people management side of it has actually become more important than ever, when I think that there's a lot of kind of fear mongering about, you know, technology is going to reduce jobs and the importance. But I think it's actually done kind of the opposite and, you know, made it even more important now to have that kind of, you know, strong talent management, if you like.
I think it's crucial. One of the things, I mean, we are an infrastructure business. MAG is, you know, a big corporate infrastructure business. So how we did things prior to MAGO was very, very traditional and corporate and governance heavy, because it's airport. It sort of had to be. So what we were trying to do was build something from the ground up within that. So we had to be cognizant of the fact that we had our limitations. One of the things that I really invested in, and I think was critical to that starting point in our journey, was taking the leadership team on a really immersive development plan. Mm. So they had to learn how to be leaders in this different world, this new world for them. So yeah, there was an element of formal development within that. I worked with an amazing guy at Manchester Business School, Professor Bones, and he's a great sort of advocate in the e-commerce space, in private practice as well as from a professor type perspective. But we worked together to pull together this program with the university that was, what do you need to do to change your behaviors and how you work to kind of fit in with the environment that you're going to be leading, really? So how do you lift up and off? How do you move away from everything being waterfall methodology, for example? How do you stop yourself from solutionizing all the time and jumping to the end result? How do you stop yourself from telling incredibly capable, talented people how to get from A to B? So you're there almost to kind of set the vision, the strategy, the shareholder expectations. And then ultimately your goal is to provide the right environment and the right ways of working, the right tools and the right flexibility, et cetera, for your team to really thrive and innovate. So that's a learning journey that leaders have to go on if they've worked in a very corporate environment that was much more traditional in the past. Mm-hmm. So that was a key thing. But also then on the softer side of things, you know, we took ourselves off to the Lake District and we worked with a development company up there to kind of really focus on how we needed to shift our dynamics as a team. It was like an SAS type program where we froze in the lake in December. I don't hate these people, honest. I just wanted to kind of get to a point where we could really be humble and get to know each other on a very personable level, so we could go, right, okay, what is it that we're doing well and what do we need to shift on as a team in order to provide this right environment. And we were cooking for our whole team of 35 people in the night, and we were sharing bunk beds and all of that kind of thing. So it took you more away from feeling like you're in this hierarchical vibe and this hierarchical structure. You're one of a team and we're a team of leaders. Mm-hmm. So I think that was really powerful and immersive. And the other thing that we did was a whole bunch of corporate raids going to other organizations that have nailed this. So anything from, you know, your Googles to, you know, Auto Trader and rental cars who have been through that transition. And we kind of learned, you know, what we wanted to be and how we wanted to do it gradually over time. So I think the big thing is leadership mindset shift. I think leaders are capable of going through this, but they need help to navigate that.
Yeah. Well, did you feel the sense of responsibility in that? Because obviously the change, I think it just is the way things are run. It comes from the hierarchy, right? I think the change can only be pushed by them. But obviously to influence that, you have to be, I suppose, in and amongst it. So do you think that it is kind of a HR responsibility to be that kind of voice for that kind of cultural and corporate change? And did you feel that responsibility?
I kind of did. I think it's a collective responsibility, but I certainly took it on my shoulders and felt an awful lot of pressure to kind of make sure that I provided the right journey, not only for the colleagues, but also for my leadership colleagues as well. Mm-hmm. And I also had to be mindful that I wasn't just starting up this agile business as a pure play startup in the Northern Quarter. I was setting it up within, you know, a very grown up corporate business, and I had to be respectful of that at the same time, but still make sure that I created the freedoms necessary to run in an agile way. So it was a huge challenge, not only for us as a leadership team to go through that journey, but then to get the buy-in from colleagues at corporate level and in the group functions, and agree new ways of working and contracting with each other going forwards. So, you know, we had to have all these racy workshops where we were defining how roles were changing and how corporate IT would do certain things, whereas MAGO would do other things. Because in essence, you're creating two-speed IT within the same organization initially until it kind of goes off and becomes its own thing. So we had all these challenges, and we kept, you know, butting up against those challenges, I think it's fair to say, in the initial, I'd say 12 to 18 months, before it became much, much easier to do business. There was a whole element of that, and also really protecting the bubble that we'd created. So the leadership team took the brunt of that, I think it's fair to say, and the rest of the team then could just crack on and do their job and feel like any other startup at, you know, anywhere in the world. So yeah, it was very challenging.
Have you ever been asked, I suppose this is out of curiosity as well, I suppose closely to that point, about, you know, being able to kind of quantify and rationalize why we're kind of doing things, right? Because, you know, principles, you know, ethics and, you know, morality and then culture, I suppose, are all very difficult to kind of quantify. You know, my background's economics, so we had ethics classes that tried to kind of essentially build out a blank canvas for rational decision making, right? And I think that it can be very difficult to do that, just in any circumstance, and especially from a cultural perspective. But they have to be based upon something, and obviously it becomes quite cult-like if you start to associate ourselves with, you know, just to use a political reference, you know, left or right, you know, left or right wing, you know, it becomes very cult-like to kind of associate ourselves with that. So in order to kind of disassociate and decentralize, you know, our principles for rational thinking and things like culture, it's very difficult to start from, you know, point zero. So have you kind of got any practices that maybe have been passed on to you about how to kind of achieve that and to potentially, like, if possible, kind of quantify that, so you can kind of, I suppose, then articulate your points with ration to, you know, the hierarchy or even the rest of the team?
Yeah, I mean, things we did was to sort of lead by example and show the team we were absolutely on the same wavelength. Was everything we did from a HR perspective, we followed Agile methodologies. So as you know, when you're doing that, you're setting out your expected ROI at the forefront of everything that you do, and then you're checking back to make sure you're ticking all those boxes. So when we're doing this for the business, the customer is at the forefront. So is this solving a customer problem? If it's not, why are we focusing on it? So in my case, it was, is this solving a colleague problem in the colleague journey currently? If not, I'm not going to focus on it. And then it was, is it going to help us build things like engagement and reduce turnover and absence and all those usual HR metrics? But more importantly, what is this going to deliver for the business in cold, hard financial terms, really? So I think by the first of the first, by the end of the first P&L year for us, which was probably about 18 months down the line, we'd smashed all of our targets, not only just from a HR perspective, but also from an EBITDA perspective. We'd overachieved by something like 7.5 million in year one. So we're absolutely adding huge profit margin to the organization. And so now they can see that this different way of working is shifting the dial in performance on every level. It is a case of us not really needing to prove this anymore. It's more a case of how do we now share this with the group? And help group to change its ways of working and its culture and implant a bit of this over there, I guess. Challenge being, that's always much more difficult to do in a very corporate and governance heavy structure like an airport business. So there are definitely elements you can take, and you can implant those elements straight away and they will take off, and there are others that would take a lot more work or just wouldn't work at all. We're in that phase now. It's exploring how we can share this with the whole business.
That's amazing. But I think as well, it's obviously credit to you for being convincing, I suppose, initially, and also the rest of the management and the leadership team for having that kind of open-mindedness to test these things out in the first place, because I suppose you are in that testing phase, and you know, regardless of whether you kind of imply, you know, some lean principles and, you know, kind of fail fast and pivoting methodology, it's still always a risk associated with that. And I suppose it's amplified when, you know, you're part of a larger organization, and especially, you know, when you're part of a small piece of that larger organization, it must be even more pressure in order to kind of succeed. So obviously, you know, there's still a lot of credit to be done on, you know, I suppose there's always that instinct element to it that probably never gets enough credit.
Yeah, I guess so. But I think we were very fortunate that the group had been talking about this for 2 or 3 years prior to Mago being born, that they knew they had to create some internal digital disruption in order to gain back, you know, market share that was eroding very gradually in the non-aero business. So all of your things like F&B and retail and what the airlines are doing in that space to sell you duty-free and you can collect it on your seat and all of that great stuff. So we started to see that if we didn't do something really quickly, then we were going to erode that market share, and it's your biggest margin. So you can't really afford to lose that element of your business. And the board were kind of totally up for this and really wanted to run with creating some sort of digital presence in the organization. So you have that buy-in, which made it much easier to kind of get on and do what you needed to do. Equally, they weren't overly prescriptive around it. They knew that they had to create the space for this to happen. And what I just said was, I don't think we can create this in the current headquarters environment. So give me any space that you've got on the whole campus for 60 people, because that's what I'll need to scale up to in year one. And we'll make it work, and we'll see how the culture develops and evolves over time. And they gave me an empty hangar on the site, because there were no offices available, unfortunately, at that time. It's just exploding with Airport City at the moment, which is great for the airport more broadly, but wasn't so great for us at the time. And we made that hangar a home, and it really felt then like a startup business, because you were in that very industrial environment, which is, I think, hip and trendy these days. And we filled it with IKEA furniture, and we hung some things on the wall, and every wall in that warehouse, which was huge. huge, became, you know, an agile working space. So it was absolutely brilliant. But that was the kind of thing that we had to do to go, okay, we're going to give this the space and then we're going to let it grow and develop and see what happens here. They were willing to do that. And how many organizations out there are in that space where they would be willing as a board to let you kind of go off and do that and give you the budget to go out and recruit your talent and do it how you want to do it, really?
Yeah.
There were a few times we probably broke the rules a little bit too much, but yeah, definitely sought forgiveness on those items. But then I think you could see, and you can definitely see now 2 years down the line, that it all paid off and that space was needed in order to create what we've created. And now it's phase two, really.
Yeah. And you know, like you're saying, it, you know, you mentioned it feels fortunate, you know, to have that kind of backing and support. And I think when you're aware of that, you know, you must feel like at least some level of obligation then to kind of, you know, do your networking, kind of articulate what's happened in your situation, and have a sense of responsibility to, you know, the wider commerce, you know, and even doing things like this podcast and such. Have they kind of been important to you? And obviously you're able to have that perspective because you have prior experiences as well. So you're in a position where you understand what kind of good looks like as well.
Yeah, it was so important. I think initially it was really important just because we were trying to get out there and tell people our story and get people interested in who we were and what we were doing, particularly from a talent acquisition perspective. But as we've gone through, it's more the giving back now, it's sharing. And we had so many companies and great thought leaders do that with us when we were fleshing this out 2 years ago, that we want to do that and give that back. Because the problem, we host people all the time here at Mago. We had a bank from Poland in recently, Alior, and it was an amazing visit and just one of many that we've done, which is, you know, you're two very, very different businesses, but your digital transformation challenges are the same. So what we went through and the challenges we had to go through as a leadership team, they're in that exactly same position now. So it's how you share that back and then help them on their journey. And we had so many companies do that with us. I think it's just time to give back a bit now.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think everyone should have that sense of responsibility. And I think that's the capitalist model that I think is missed, isn't it? Is like, we're not hiding all of the secrets here. You know, if we've had the successes, we should feel that sense of responsibility. So it's great to hear that, you know, you have had that. You know, just actually while we were talking there as well, I was thinking about, you know, what kind of good looks like. And just to, I suppose, just backtrack a little bit on, you know, the junior hires and acquiring graduates and such. I think the interesting thing is that they now have kind of access to the marketplace. They know what, you know, what salary they should be on compared to the rest of the market. There's all these resources that I suppose the internet has done that's, you know, enabled kind of transparency. But with that, I think what's also happened, in my opinion, is that there's kind of this sense of the grass is always greener, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's true for a lot of, you know, junior people. So you have to try and put people in a position to where they can make their own decisions, but at the same time, they don't really have too much of a basis for decision making because they don't have perspective, because this might be their first real job or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, how does that process work for you, where you kind of are able to show them what kind of good looks like, and try and convince them without just telling them? Because it's almost like they need validation on what good looks like, because they're always going to be in a position where they feel as though the kind of the grass is always greener.
Yeah, I think it's a mutual education piece. So as we're bringing graduates and more recently younger apprentices into the business, they're educating on us on what they think good looks like and what they're expecting from the workplace, which is fantastic. And equally, we're doing that because sometimes the expectations are maybe not very realistic. So, and that is sometimes, you know, most often we don't find that, but we are finding with some particularly graduate level entrants that they have an insatiable appetite to be promoted, you know, within a year or 2 years or whatever it may be, but not necessarily clued into what it would take to get you to that next step. So I think it's like a coaching process that we're definitely trying to do in any case, which is, you know, this is, you know, how we think it should be and what it should look like. And for those wanting promotion, you have to show us something above and beyond what you're doing day to day in your day job. If you're kind of hitting your objectives year in, year out, but you're not really doing much in excess of that, what is it that makes the leadership team think, okay, you're ready for a promotion over somebody else? And it's not just because you've asked for it or because you think you're due a pay rise. So most of the graduates that we have over recent years, some of them are more recent than others, they've all stayed with us bar one. And one was just so driven by job title in that next role and salary and package that there was no keeping them. So I think in the end, it was the right decision for that person to go, because if that is the sole motivator, it's probably not the right business for them anyway. We pay really competitive packages. We're median in terms of, you know, the salary and the market rate, and we have incredibly good employee packages at MAG, a great pension scheme, good bonus, all of those great things, car allowances, etc. So if they come to us and their own motivation is salary and job title, then it's not really the right culture. But most of them have absolutely stuck it out, and they're developing these portfolio careers where they move around different areas of MAGO and develop into new professions, I think it's fair to say. And they're enjoying that because it's giving them a freedom to go, okay, well, I like this. I really loved that. I wasn't so sure about this. And actually, I think I'm going to develop my career down this line. And we've seen that happening now over the last couple of years. We're going into our third year now, and they've all stuck with us. And it's that career and the culture and the leadership and the buy-in and the value that we place on them, I think, that makes them want to stay with us. Our turnover is ridiculously low. The only people that we really lost were in the early days transitioning from the existing MAG culture into the new digital MAGO culture, and them self-selecting out because it wasn't the right change for them.
Yeah.
Rest of the turnover has been minimal. I mean, you're talking like 3 or 4 people in 6 months. So it's a great sticky culture. They're enjoying it. And I think they're enjoying it because we're constantly listening. You know, when I said about earlier around how we sat down and we hacked the culture and the values together with the team, as the team has grown, we haven't stopped that. Every month we have a culture lab where we all sit down and we're tracking with emojis. How are we feeling about X, Y, or Z at the moment? How are we doing on this? Do we need to improve it? Do we need to invest a little further? Or is there something that we need to drop and stop doing? And if you're constantly listening to their wants and needs, and provided you're on the same page and you don't think that's a completely irrational request, then, you know, there's no harm in kind of indulging it really and going with it. So, I think it's a balance. You're mutually educating each other, and it's just getting the right balance.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? It's like it's achievements, you know, it's like we're working towards, which I think is positive, you know, it's like, what have you done? You know, and I think if you're not bought into that, you know, and you're still very much bought into the I suppose, the old school career ladder, you know, it's going to be a misfit. And I think, you know, that's kind of been ironed out massively. You know, what have you done? What are your achievements? You know, and you have to kind of allow people to be able to go and achieve what they want to achieve. And then when they do that, come in, you know, tell them that there's also other stuff that they need to achieve, right? And that's how you kind of, I suppose, are retaining people. To that point as well, and I am a bit conscious of time here as well, you know, for you, you're a person who clearly spends a lot of time thinking about others, thinking about the culture, thinking about how you can get the best out of other people. You know, for you, from a personal perspective as well, you know, how do you kind of keep yourself engaged and motivated? I mean, it's obviously easy speaking to you to kind of get that, you know, the passion comes across, it's quite obvious. But, you know, how do you approach that kind of to the same vein, the sense of achievement and and maybe even something like goal setting to ensure that, you know, you're happy and you're content with, you know, what you're working on and the direction of your career?
Yeah, I mean, I am career focused, and I've never kind of said I'm going to have this very set path of where I'm headed, but I do generally know where I want my career to go. And so I'm always conscious of, as much as I love what I do, and I absolutely do love my role, particularly the role that I've had here in the last couple of years, you're always thinking about that next step. I think for me, as long as you're learning and developing and growing, then you're probably in the right spot. And if you feel like you're not learning and developing and growing, it's time to move on. So I recognize very quickly when I'm getting into that comfort zone mode, and I challenge myself, even if I'm really loving it, I'll go, right, okay, Kelly, have a word. Are you really learning and growing at the moment? And if not, then it's time for you to start looking for something else, either internally or externally. So I'm quite hard on myself in that respect. But when I do find myself flagging a little bit internally, or we're still struggling with certain problems, or we need to find answers to X, Y, or Z, I try to focus a lot of time externally. So I'm not totally insular in terms of what's going on in MAG and MAGO. I'm out in the market quite a lot, and not just in the Northwest. I do travel globally to conferences, speaking on panels and round tables and conferences, and kind of just sharing our journey, but having really, you know, wonderful, highly informed discussions with other professionals, not just in HR, around their journeys and what they're doing and discovering and learning in different areas. And I find that fascinating. And sometimes, you know, in the UK, we're far ahead on certain items, and in other ways, we're quite far behind. You know, I spent time in Berlin last year at a conference, and it blew my mind in terms of how far they were advanced in digital recruitment, for example. And I thought, gosh, we've got to catch up with all of that. And then straight away, I come back with all these ideas, and I'm like, right, okay, guys, we need to do an MVP on a recruitment platform, and I want to see us doing this much more digitally going forwards. It creates a better candidate experience, etc. So yeah, there's always something to do and to develop and learn, and I think you can find those things, but ultimately you know when it's time to go on and do your next thing.
Kelly, it's been fantastic talking with you. Really appreciate the time, and you know, thank you so much for stopping by.
No, thank you for asking me.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.